Someone told me this evening that they actually miss my handouts. Sometimes you can't win. You have a handout, we remind you. It's God's handout. We encourage you to open your Bibles to Proverbs, the first chapter. This works, huh? Okay. Sort of an introduction to Proverbs, and it's a little something for everybody. Primarily, the Proverbs are written for the young, but as we go through this introduction, we're going to go through verses 1 through 19, so you'll get a look at what was just read, plus an application of it, one of the applications that is made. So we encourage you to stay with us. The sermon's not going to last more than 20, 25 minutes, less if I get nervous and start forgetting things, or just speed up and get through it. We encourage you to look at the text as we go through it. We're going to hit some definitions in the first seven verses. Can't get away from it, but they're necessary because a lot of those words there are synonyms, and they kind of mean the same thing, but they kind of don't. And so we're going to look at the difference, and you get a good perspective of what the Proverbs are trying to do for us. Just starting off with the word proverb, sometimes we have a simplistic understanding of what a proverb is. It's the first word in this whole book. That's what Hebrews usually do. They take the first word and make it the title of the book. We generally associate a proverb with its counterpart in the New Testament, a parable. And it does have that definition of a similitude, something that's laid aside for comparison. Okay? It's also got a broader sense, as you'll see in the Proverbs. Most of them don't have that much to do with a parable-like character to it. It generally is the broader sense of just wise sayings or things that are handed down. But there is a very critical definition of it, which I've never heard anybody until I got into the study of it, which means dominance. Okay, these are the sayings that are dominant over any other wise sayings men may have. And they're dominant because they are sayings that are backed by the wisdom of God. Okay? So these are the Proverbs of Solomon, verse 1, son of David, king of Israel. Okay? In both of those prepositions go with Solomon. He is son of David. He is the king of Israel. Okay? Sometimes people want to think, well, it's just explaining David. It's explaining Solomon. Okay, as we get into it, I have to go verse by verse. Number two, it says, this is the purpose, to give knowledge and understanding. Okay. Now, wisdom and understanding. Wisdom and instruction. It depends on your translation. I'm going to go with wisdom and instruction. That's my translation. Okay, wisdom. Okay, it's going to have several defining things to it. We live in a world of varying realities, worlds within worlds. They do function, they are applicable, but they are limited. Okay, you can know finances, economics, certain things that are worlds within themselves, but they have limitations. At some point, they kind of fall apart. What you're dealing with in this kind of wisdom is a wisdom of the ultimate realities. This is what the Proverbs are going to give you. What is the ultimate reality that's the basis of all realities? Or what is the reality in lieu of all the false realities or false worlds that men come up with? It also has to do, because you're looking at the ultimate reality, Proverbs, is letting you know that the ultimate reality is God. So a sense of the word of wisdom has to do with piety towards God. And ultimately, it's wisdom. And there's wisdom that's used in the New Testament. We run into it, Paul's writing to the Corinthians. There's a wisdom of the world and whatever. So the wisdom specifically the Proverbs deal with is the wisdom of knowing God and how to please Him, which is something Paul gets into. Walking in the light, Ephesians 5, is learning to please God. That is the ultimate reality. That is the ultimate wisdom. Okay? And with that is instruction. Instruction here is the training, the discipline that has to go along with learning this wisdom. And Proverbs is going to give that to you. So that makes it, vitally essential. Okay? Then it goes on to discern sayings of understanding. So as you listen to the various dissertations and discourses that Solomon is going to give us, and other wise men, it's not just the Proverbs of Solomon. Okay, he gives you the ability to kind of take them apart, to interpret them, to understand as men are imparting wisdom to you, how to go about understanding what they're trying to say. Now, verse 3, it talks about, it's also how to receive, that is, take hold of, instruction in wise behavior. Now, we really don't need to come up with definition. It supplies its own. The next three words are the definition of wise behavior: the righteousness, the justice, the equity. Righteousness is doing what is right. Right in the meaning of the word. Okay. So it's learning what is right. Justice is making wise judgments, either of yourself as you go through or of others. You can make those decisions, a weighing of things to look at, not only the letter but the spirit of the law. Okay? And equity is aligning yourself, in piety with the laws of God. So the right thing to do and the proper judgment comes from understanding God's law. Okay, and that's your instruction in wise behavior. Now, who does this pertain to? Verse 4. Okay. To give prudence to the naive, in my version. Yours probably says instead of naive, the simple. Someone once described this person as someone whose parents never let them out of the backyard. They have no knowledge of the world. They're easily duped. They're too open to things. Okay. What prudence is going to do, prudence is giving them the ability to assess situations and people so that they can see, when evil begins to develop and take precautions against it. That's prudence. Okay. So it's going to help out the simple. Okay. To the youth, okay. It's going, and that could be young people or old people if they're immature. It's going to help them grow up. Okay? So it's going to give them knowledge, and the word knowledge here has to do with practical, experimental knowledge. That is, by putting things to the test, they know what's right and wrong. The Hebrew writer puts it this way in Hebrews 12, Romans 12. I urge you, brethren, to submit your bodies as a living sacrifice that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So how are you finding out what God's will is? Put it to the test and you see if it flies or not. That's one of the things you're going to learn. In fact, what we talked about this Wednesday is what God is trying to do for you is not only in the teachings that we have in the scriptures, but the whole world around us has been given to us by God in order to learn. He puts us through tasks that we can test out what's right or wrong. Okay? This is why he gives us tribulation. Okay? And like Romans 5, James 2 says, we rejoice in our tribulation knowing that it produces certain things. So this is what we're going to give to the youth. This knowledge and, I forget what the other word is, that's just discretion. Okay. Discretion, caution. Yeah, that's what we're going to give them. So they proceed carefully through life as they're testing out all this stuff. So the words tie together, especially as they're applied to these various individuals. Okay. To the wise man, the wise man will hear and increase in learning. Okay, so it's for anybody at any level. Okay? You're dealing with the wisdom of God, so you never are wise enough. And a wise man realizes this and is always open to God, so he'll increase in learning. Okay? To a man of understanding, he will acquire wise counsel. Interesting word. Okay? It's used of a man who manages a vessel. Okay, you think what a captain has to do? Another term that goes along with it, it has to be added to it, is navigator. Navigation. I mean, in order to steer a vessel, you have to be able to, you have to know where you're going, and you have to be able to look at the signs and things to chart your course. Okay, so this is what Proverbs do. They give you the ability to chart a course in life, and even more, their stratagem. That's another aspect of the definition. I mean, even as a captain has to plot a course, he looks at the map and sees all the variables. He sees where there's shallow water, where there's deep water. He knows where the shoals are. He knows where the rocks are. He knows when there's winds that will blow him into the coast. He knows what there's winds that are coming off the land that will blow him out to sea. It might even be an aid to him, keep him out of trouble. He knows the safe harbors. Okay. All these things he knows to get him through the course. And he makes strategies. He knows there's places where he might run into trouble, especially from pirates or whatever. So Proverbs give a person all of this stuff. So it is, as you study through this, it is to understand the proverb. In fact, what you do, the more proverbs you understand, the more you have the capability of understanding other proverbs. Okay, this is not new science. In fact, I learned this in mathematics. You even if you quite don't understand math, if you keep doing the problems, it becomes kind of second nature to you. And you build on that, from addition, subtraction to up to calculus. Okay, proverbs work the same way. You learn the simple things, and you keep piling it on, and pretty soon you can understand the other things, like what follows, a figure. Okay, figurative language is something that has to be worked out, taken in context. Okay, Proverbs helps you to do this. To understand the sayings of the wise. Okay, as you go through this, you're going to get the wise sayings of Solomon and others. So it'll help you, work that out so you can tell what's true from what's false. And finally, riddles, dark sayings. It's a very rare word that's used, but it's used of Samson's riddle about the lion and the honeycomb. And even more pertinent, it's a word that's used of the test given to Solomon by the Queen of Sheba. Dark sayings. Can you work this out, Solomon? So we know he did that, so he's a capable author to explain to us how to work out the dark sayings. And then verse 7 lays the groundwork for all of it. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Okay, that's where it starts. Because if you're looking for reality, if you're looking for what is wisdom, it's got to start with God. And that fear there is not just an abject fear, although as it comes to the Greek, it's phobos, where we get the word phobia from. But it's a healthy respect, a reverent respect. I mean, you can't come to God on a good buddy-buddy relationship. This is, the creator of the universe, all-powerful, all-knowing. You need to give him due respect. So you better come very humbly. Okay. But it's also in a way that you begin to develop such a relationship with him that you fear to lose that relationship. I mean, when you date someone, you're on your best behavior because you don't want to offend them. Okay, it's that kind of reverence. You want it to work out. Okay, so you tread carefully, you tread reverently. Okay. The fool, on the other hand, and the best word, fool is fully defined, we got into that in Ecclesiastes, but primarily it's someone who wills to go against God. That's why he's considered a fool. He wants to reject all wisdom in the world. He thinks he knows it all, he's arrogant, or just wants to not care about knowledge at all. So he's going to despise, from the very start, what is wisdom, what is instruction. An example. Now, we start off with a really good example here in Proverbs. Now, first of all, it's going to try to give you the right way of going. So it starts, hear my son, first of all, your father's instruction, okay, and your mother's teachings. I mean, these are the people that love you the most. These are the people that are the first adults in your life. These are the people you should accord, special consideration to. And especially since we're dealing with individuals in the Proverbs, we're talking about people that have been trained in the Word of God. Okay? So the instruction that the Father is going to give is the kind of discipline and training that will keep you within that. And then the teachings of the mother, they have to do with, in accord with, the will of God, the law of God. And he goes, they are. Not will be, maybe, or whatever. They are. A graceful wreath to the head and ornaments around the neck. Okay. Now, he's painting something that's in conflict here. See, first of all, he's laying, now, does that look like something really interesting? Well, it's hard work. It's sort of the kind of individual that is not the one that drops out of school. This is the one that, mundane stuff, goes home, does the homework, gets good grades, graduates from high school, from college, from a university, okay, goes out and gets a good job, okay, starts to put together a good family, raises the kids right, is respected in the community. His character is well built. He can accomplish things. He's well respected. That's how all this stuff becomes adornments to him. When they look, people look at him, and if they have problems, they go to him. That's the kind of character we should be building in ourselves. And it takes a working out every day of doing this stuff. Listening to the parents, listening to good instructors, listening to the wisdom of God. Now, the rest of this is a contradiction, and it shows, we'll look at, what's building here of what the world does. Okay, so he goes, my son, when sinners entice thee. Now, the entice there, what the Hebrew does, it's got a simple verb form, what they call the qual. Okay. And then they've got various forms of it. Okay, this enticement is put in the PL form. That is the intensive aspect of it. So if you're just in the qual, you broke a vase. Okay. In the pael form of it, you smash the vase. Intensive. So he's warning him right to begin with. When sinners entice you, that is, they're going to work hard at it. So you're already in the crux of your first problem. When sinners entice you, and here's the enticement. Okay. When they say, "Come, let's lie in wait for blood. Okay. Let us," I think I'm already off the track, "lie in, let us ambush the innocent without cause." Okay. This is the secrecy involved of the wrong life. This kind of in the dead of night, sneaking out, doing this kind of stuff. For a lot of people, this is excitement. And this is what the world offers. Okay, the second inducement to this is, we will swallow them like Sheol, even whole like those that go down to the pit. The sense of power there. I mean, as you look at people that are trying to, what they call the made man, you got to take a life, okay? Because there's a feeling of power in that. It doesn't matter that the person has his back to you, or probably couldn't take you, face to face anyway. There's just a sense of power of taking another life, and that's an inducement. That's two. Okay, this is what sinners try to do. Okay, the third inducement: we will find great wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. So there's always the lucrative aspect of it. that enticement, the third enticement. And the fourth is casting your lots with us. And we'll share the same purse. It's kind of a gang mentality. You found a family, you found acceptance. So those are four strong ways of pulling someone in. Okay. So now we got interrupted a little bit, my son. Do not walk in the way with them. Whether it's the way they're going, their behavior, don't go that way. Even more so, you know, keep your feet from the path. Okay. A path is a byway, sort of. That's what they've chosen, a life that's off the main. And that's going to be a problem. Okay. And something to watch out for. Because he goes on, you know, here's the warnings. Their feet are swift to do evil. They hasten, you know, to shed blood. Now, this is quoted in Romans, the third chapter. There's a whole list of things. It talks about people are always, you know, messing up. And it talks about their feet, you know, running to shed blood. That's verse 15. Verse 18, it sums it all up. There's no fear of God before their eyes. That's why they do this stuff. They're not afraid of God. They should be, but they're not. If you get caught up with them very quickly, you're going to find yourself in a mess. Perhaps they told you one thing, but by the time they get through with you, you're going to find yourself in deep, and you don't even know what happened. Now, the next verse, I've run across a lot of explanations. We're talking, indeed, you know, the net is spread in the eyes. It's useless to spread the net in the eyes of the birds. I'm going to take it this way. What the father's trying to tell him, even a bird brain knows, you know, that it won't get caught when the net is right in front of it. So this is, you know, an explanation. Go, okay, think about what you're about to do. I've already laid out what the trap is. Don't go there. Don't go there. You see, it looks good at the beginning, but the sting is in the tail. It's at the end product that you're going to pay for it all. This is why they say, you know, it goes back to verse 11. It says, yeah, you're going to lie in wait for blood, but it's going to be your own blood. Okay, you may want to ambush a life, but it's going to be your life that you're ambushing. When you stop to think about it, I mean, from what we know, you know, first of all, you know, let's say the worst thing about crime is the company you keep. Okay? Can you really trust those people? I mean, if they're swift to shed blood, what makes your blood so special? Especially not to them. So what have we done? Okay, think about it. So they plot, you know, their crime. They're gonna make big money off of it. You know, just make it modern day. Say five of you get together and you go rob a bank. And I'm gonna use a term, you know, it's kind of in the middle. They're gonna steal $100,000. You know, sounds like a lot of money. Ooh, until you break it down. Okay, $100,000 split five ways. Now you've plan this out, you risk your life for $20,000. That's just about what someone making minimum wage would make in a year. And generally, these things would be spaced out within a year or so like that. So how much are you really making, even as you're risking your life? And you're staying in lousy little hotel rooms, keeping bad company, and they may be thinking, $20,000 isn't that much to risk my life for. But if I take you out, that's maybe $40,000 for me. I mean, you got to deal with this. I mean, you set this trap on yourself. You know, you're keeping the wrong kind of company. Especially, there's always someone who maybe rats out, or somebody that knows what's going on, a friend of a friend, you know, may tell the police for a bribe. Or somebody, I mean, we're not dealing with, you know, the brightest bulbs in the box anyway. So someone's going to take their money and they're going to spend it quickly. And somebody's going to ask, where did you get all the money for a new car? I mean, it just sets itself. Just, you know, down to the basics, the police can make a million mistakes. The criminal can't afford to make even one. Is that really a lifestyle? That's a life that gets cut short. Even a professional criminal spends about three or five, you know, stays in the joint. You know, they spend most of their life, you know, in a prison. They get out, they're cool, they're smart, whatever, supposedly in their own eyes. And then they do something stupid that gets them put back in there. They've ambushed their own life. And the last verse that goes along with this, you know, so is, you know, anyone whose life is taken with, you know, gained by violence. Now, the word violence isn't in the original text. It's an extrapolation of the meaning of the term gain. Now, it's going wholeheartedly for gain. In fact, its counterpart can be found in the New Testament, 1 Timothy 6, where it says, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And from it, you know, they've even pierced themselves. You know, the piercing of the self brings out the last part of this. You know, by it, okay, or because of it, not referring to the violence, but to the gain. Okay, it takes the life of the one that possesses it. I mean, that's your whole life anyway, is the money. It'll never satisfy. You've risked everything for it. What's it really worth? You've given up the whole world for your own, you know, you've given up your soul for the whole world. It's not worth it. Okay. Things like this is what the Proverbs bring out. Very extreme cases. Trying to get people to understand what's going on, you know, how to properly assess life, the real realities, how to make proper judgments, to test things out. I mean, God is trying to make smart people. In fact, that's the kind of people he wants around him. Yeah. Think about it. He doesn't want people that are disobedient, that want to go their own way, that don't really particularly, you know, reverence him, you know, that don't build themselves up on his wisdom. Yeah. So you have to ask yourself, like all the Proverbs we've been going through and everything else, you know, what kind of soil am I? What kind of person am I? What kind of son am I? Even, you know, if I'm in the kingdom, am I doing okay? Am I really being pleasing to God? Is the wisdom kicking in yet? If it does, we should be wholeheartedly immersing ourselves in God's word to try to understand the things that he knows and he's trying to reveal to us, and the things he's trying to teach us, instruct us, and bring us up by. If you're visiting with us, we appreciate your presence. We hope this lesson has been beneficial and helpful to you. If you've got any questions, yeah, I'll be happy to talk with you afterwards. Of course, with all lessons, there's an invitation. You've got to be a special person to begin with to understand, I want to do what God wants. I want him as my best friend in this life. It's the only way to really get through it, to survive it, and to actually become victorious over it, and to excel in the life to come. A lot of times, we don't stop to think about it. I mean, a lot of kids in school, you know, they just kind of grind out the study and everything else, and they don't realize that what they're learning is hopefully preparing them for a next life. And that's what this life is doing. It's just a test case to see what kind of people we are. Okay. This is not it. God is testing us as to what kind of people we're going to be committed to, you know, in the next life. As far as I understand, since he made us, you know, we can see this from the garden itself, you know, he made a situation where we work. That's how we're happiest, when we're doing things, building things, you know, helping others. So it's not we're going to get to heaven and just, you know, lay around all day. I know people look at it that way and go, I don't want that. Well, God doesn't want that either. We're preparing ourselves. In fact, there's a parable that goes, you know, who is faithful in little is faithful in much. He's trying to find out who's faithful in this life. Because what you're learning, you're going to apply in the next one. Hope you're ready for it. you're not, you may not get there. So please, if there's anything we can do to help you, let us know as we stand to sing.